Hi everyone, I'm Jenna Milley with Screenwriting U, and I'm here today with showrunner and director George Mihalka and also writer Al Kratina, who worked on the show 24 Hour Rental, which has been described as a cross between Clerks and The Sopranos. Hi guys.
Hi, Jenna.
How's it going?
Hi, how are you? Hi.
Great. Well, I'm super. Super excited to talk to you about this show, I just want to know where did the idea come from, or how did you get this assignment? I'm always curious to know how someone comes to a project. Was this your idea, or was this something that someone brought to you? And in either one of you can answer. Actually, it would be great if both of you could answer.
Al speaking. So it started with a feature-length screenplay that I worked on, George, it came to George, and it was somewhat similar to what we see with 24 Hour Rental, but it was a gangster story, more of a crime thriller, and George took a look at it, and he thought it might be better suited in a different medium with a slightly different take on it, right, George?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happened is I really fell in love with the screenplay for the feature film. And I approached a few distributors and producers and financiers, and the verdict was that this is so dark and so violent and so black, and the comedy is so black, that it would be very difficult to get it financed at the time. So I went back to Al and to Frank and said, what if we decided to make this more of a satire comedy and try to see if we can make it happen as potentially a web series and or a television series? So Al went back to the drawing board, and we came up with a pilot script that I approached a friend of mine who was invested in smaller projects before, Eris Salvatore, and Eris invested a little bit of money, and we went out and shot a pilot. One of the things, again, was because the material was sort of far out and risky, that we thought it would be much easier to have a pilot that showed the fact that we can create something interesting and charming, even though we're dealing with people with absolutely no redeeming social value, no sympathetic traits, character traits, and basically making fun of anti-heroes. So we shot the pilot, and we all said, hey, this works. And I ended up in Los Angeles visiting and having some meetings down there, and I showed it to a producer called Tom Berry. I used to go to film school there. And we used to write some pretty crazy stuff together back in film school. And I said, you know, Tom, I know this is not the kind of work that you guys do. They mostly do science fiction and thrillers. But, you know, if you got an idea of where maybe I can point me to the right direction, if you know anyone that I could talk to about me developing this into a television series. And the next day, Tom called me back and said, I think I can make this happen. I love it.
Wow.
So, Tom, yeah. And so Tom, 6 months later, gave us a call and said, well, boys, you know, it looks like we've got a green light. So why don't you get down and start writing the rest of the episodes and write the stories and let's get a move on. So that's basically how it happened. You know, it was one of those things where if we were going to listen to everybody telling us on how crazy this is and how it'll never find an audience and how you'll never be able to make it because it's just so totally out of the box and left field, we never would have made it, but luckily enough, we had the gumption to make the pilot, and from then on, we had the opportunity to make it into a series. That's basically happened.
Great. Well, going back to a point you made about the characters being unlikable, how do you get the audience to rally, you know, around your heroes so that you can at least have them tracking the story in a way? Because there is a central character. Is there some techniques you use in writing to make sure that the audience does sort of understand? I know the main character has a mother and he's nice to her. Is that part of the way you get the audience to rally around your main character?
Well, that's the challenge, right? And that's the challenge that we set for ourselves. I mean, that was something that really fascinated me with the project, and George mentioned the idea of the anti-hero. And, you know, you have all these shows over the course of the past 10, 15 years, you know, Sopranos, Sons of Anarchy, stuff like this, where we have these reprehensible people that are sort of kind of held up as sort of ideals, you know, and they're terrible people and they do terrible things, but yet we're rooting for them. And so that was the sort of satirical thrust behind the show, and its conception was to make fun of that idea, to take these unlikable characters and just amp that up and make them, you know, to see if we could just make the most terrible person possible and see if we can get the audience to like it. And then the process sort of satirize and parody this idea of the anti-hero worship that we've got in culture. And now, to answer your question, how to do that? Well, that was tricky. I mean, that's a challenge. So what? And we struggled with it. I know I certainly did when I was working on the screenplays. So the attempt is obviously if you can make people laugh, which was the goal. If characters are funny, they're inherently slightly more likable. So that was especially with Ace, who is a truly unpleasant person deep down inside. I mean, he seemed to make people laugh, so that helps with the likability. Also, you know, giving them a goal that everyone can relate to, you know, and everyone's got that in the show, especially Tracker, our lead. You know, we can understand what he wants, and we can understand, sympathize with what he wants, even if we don't necessarily like him or we see his flaws. If we can understand what he wants and feel for what he wants, then we're going to want him to succeed. So that was another thing. And then, of course, yeah, we have characters like Louise, his Tracker's girlfriend, and his mom, who he loves deeply, and you know, he's got this sort of protege, Sam, and we can show a little bit of some inadvertent goodness that our characters have in their relationships with each other, then that helps the audience come along for the ride. And then, of course, if you have an interesting enough plot, hopefully that pulls them along, too.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the plot and the plot is so intricate, and the time, you know, the clock is ticking on him, and he's got basically 24 hours to come up with the money, or he's going to be wearing some Endover shoes. And, you know, watching him squirm, watching him try to get out of these situations, and, you know, using whatever charm he's got, using whatever dials he's got, using whatever, however he can paint it, however he can lie it, however he can manipulate it, he will. But at the same time, we do understand, you know, that people in trouble do desperate things. So what we did was obviously, again, blow up the desperate reaction, you know. But then again, you know, we pull the rug out under him, because, you know, when he finds that ring on the severed finger, he knew that was expensive. He could have just given it away, but no, he's going to try to rip off the Serbians because he knows the ring is more expensive than the 56 grand he owes. So right. He decides to swallow it, you know, and then obviously that leads to certain problems. Such as, how do I get it out now?
Well,
and the problem being that now, because of all of this, he's got, you know, he's going to miss the deadline. You know, so all of that, you know, adds to the enjoyment of watching this guy squirm, which, whether we like it or not, we end up rooting for him. So that was the kind of thing, you know, where we said, how can we interestingly influence an audience into liking these people, and especially Tracker, while at the same time we know that, you know, he'd sell just about anything to get ahead.
And that was really an interesting plot like, you know, a plot point in your script. Can you talk a little bit about how far you'll go, or is there no, you know, is there no boundaries to what you'll do as far as gross out or blood or severed fingers? What, because you talk about how this is so dark. Do you just sort of go for it, or do you guys walk a certain line of believability versus there's just a little bit of horror sometimes in some of the shots and some of the moments, especially when the one guy's pushed off the balcony. Where do you, you know, how did you come up with the tone, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, I mean, it was, I think you exactly picked up on it, right? Like, I certainly come from, and George as well, you know, with my Bloody Valentine stuff like that for George, and I come from a genre background as a huge fan of genre, specifically horror, and of course, you know, the creepier crime stuff and thrillers and action and things like that. So those really kind of specific stylized subgenres of cinema. So, you know, since... You know, again, you don't always know when you're going to have another chance to have as much freedom as we had on this project. So we really tried to get everything out of our systems, or at least I certainly did. I figured I'd never get another chance to make a TV show like this. Certainly not the creative control that we had, or create the freedom that we had, I should say. So I wanted to, on my end at least, I wanted to go as far as I could, especially with stuff like you know, violence and gore and just oddity, and, you know, it also helped the fact that, you know, as George mentioned it was at some point conceived as a web show, and I figured, you know, it's the internet, people have sex with horses on there, we can probably do whatever we want, and then by the time it turned out to be a show that would be on television, it was too late to kind of. The ball was already rolling. We were already going full speed ahead with all the sickness that we could get on screen. So we figured we'd help.
And you know, I mean, basically, what we tried to do is just stay on the plausible side of absurdity. You know, the tone was always just at the edge, the plausible edge of absurdity, or the plausible edge. Of ultra violence, you know, like for instance, when they throw the guy out the window, you know, again, most people wouldn't think that, you know, kicking the shit out of him right afterwards would be a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, the reality is that, you know, these things do happen. You know, so what we tried to do was to, you know, again, make violence hurt. You know, I mean, when we have violence on this show, the violence is actually highly realistic. You know,
right.
You know, the storyline might go and flirt with almost Monty Python-esque absurdity here and there, but when it comes to the violence is pretty raw and it hurts. You know, when people get punched, they bleed. Something, you know, they don't get kicked in the head four times and then shake it off and walk like nothing happened.
Right. You mentioned, in the way the show was described to me, the Clerks and The Sopranos are mentioned. Were those some of your influences, or can you talk about what other works that you thought of, or who else you were paying homage to while creating this, what your influences were?
Obviously those two were big ones. The Sopranos specifically... was a major one, both because we were trying to skewer the gangster genre, and then to go back to sort of a long-winded rant about the anti-hero, one of the things that I loved about The Sopranos was, you know, the creators, they never, as much as we like Tony Soprano, they never let us forget that he was a terrible human being. Like, every time we started to really get in the groove with him, they'd have him, you know, beat someone to death with his fists or do something horrible to one of his various girlfriends.
Or kill his nephews. You know, kill his nephew and kill his cousin.
Exactly. That was a major influence. And then
put a hit on his mom.
Any time we got too comfortable with Tony, they'd be right there to remind us he's a terrible person. So that kind of fed into sort of what we were trying to do with skewering that idea of the anti-hero. Other than that, from my end, I mean, I worked at a video store that was similar to the video store in the show, except without all the severed fingers and methamphetamine. So all that stuff kind of, all kinds of, you know, Italian horror movies and old 60s Matheson Penn to spooky fogs and witches in the graveyard sort of stuff. Bled in there, all that sort of stuff tried to fed into the tone when I was writing it. And then George, obviously, his eye picks up on that stuff and his own influences to make it kind of, you know, take sort of the stuff that we're trying to work into the scripts and bring that life visually. I think, and hopefully it came through. I mean, one of the things is, you know, it's about a video store. It's about a video store that makes us, you know, makes us money off porno and powder, but is full of, you know, obscure horror films and genre classics.
And art movies, yeah.
Movies. Yeah. So we wanted to kind of infuse that kind of those disparate elements, you know, everything from Godard to Baba to whatever in there. So, you know, we tried to be as diverse as possible in our influences to kind of thematically match.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I mean, basically, obviously, you know, we riffed off some of Scorsese's finest, some of Godfather's finest moments, some of Tarantino's finest moments. There's little bits of homage here and there. You know, one of the things that we tried to keep with it, as a matter of fact, on our website at one point, there was sort of like a contest to figure out where the homage is. And where the certain, what we would do is take a line from a famous gangster movie or horror film and paraphrase it and put it into the mouths of our characters and then see if anyone would pick up on it.
Oh, it's fun.
You know, so there's a great deal of that kind of hidden material in it. And jokingly, we always said, you know, I mean, we're making a TV show, you know, about ultra violence and film criticism.
Huh. Well, that's what's so fun about it, because you can talk about that.
Yeah,
So one last question for you. What are you doing for season two? Has that been an option, or did you end season one in a way that you could continue? Or, you know, were you conscious of that when you were planning the arc for season one?
Well, we definitely tried to set it up for a strong and solid and insane season two. That's always been the hope and the plan. And we'll see, I guess, how that.
You know, I mean, we're hoping the Canadian network is happy to do so. What we need to do is to make sure that we get, you know, as many people and many eyeballs as possible watching it on Hulu, so that we can get that right buzz to be able to come back and do even a bigger, stronger second season.
Great. Well,
I
can't wait to see it. It's a really fun show. It's very different, like you said, and I think that's what audiences like nowadays, is just something a little bit, you know, a little bit different from what they're seeing. You know, there's so many channels now and there's so much TV, but you want to find something kind of special. So congratulations, guys.
Well, thank you. I mean, like, what we tried to do is what, like, the old Monty Python statement, you know, and now for something completely different.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And hopefully, you know, it'll resonate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so nice talking to you, and I hope I can talk to you again for season two or whatever's next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. You're so welcome.